We're taking up the story now of Baal Peor, continuing that we explained how this sin came about, and that it wasn't just the action of the sin. It wasn't just the sin itself, but it was a certain condition that the Jews had allowed themselves to fall back into a very primitive regression. Regression. Instinctual regression, which resulted in a certain state with regard to the sensual, the sexual, and something which is very, very connected to the sensual is the idolatrous. And as we said, that's what's stated in the Kriya Shema, that you're not allowed to go after your heart and after your eyes. That's a reference to both expressions of the primitive, instinctual. Then God communicated to Moshe Rabbeinu, because the anger of God had been unleashed against the Jews. And when it says anger, it always has consequences. It seems that there was a plague, the Magepha. But the plague did not necessarily direct itself solely to the sinners. That's what it would seem. For if that were the case, then it would not be necessary for the instruction to Moshe to set up these courts and to judge the sinners. That was Moshe's task. So this was some kind of a punishment which afflicted the Jews. And we don't know, we can't go into the details, what was the nature of the plague, although we find out that 24,000 people died. So it was something very, very serious. However, it does not seem to be that it was targeted directly against the sinners. Thus, Moshe Rabbeinu by himself would not be able to know. See, it's not so simple. When things happen, when misfortunes occur, so we're at a very limited perspective. We don't know. It's not so simple. Everybody, of course, jumps. Everybody has an agenda. Everybody knows exactly what the problem is. And usually it has to do with what his own particular thing is, that the people are not doing for the religious. It's because they're not keeping Shabbos. Everybody always has his own take. It's very simple. To most people, it's a simple matter to interpret. But the reality is it's very complicated, and nobody really knows the ways of God. And absent a particular revelation to a prophet, it's just guesswork, pretty much. And here it's as it's unfolding. So, something's happening. It's a calamity, but what to do about it? So thus, God instructed Moshe that this was the issue, and the only way that it could be resolved would be through the action of the people themselves, of the leaders. The leaders over here play a very important role. The leaders are very, very seriously implicated in what is going on. How do I know that the leaders themselves are being implicated? The Torah is very merciless against leaders, because the Torah doesn't accidentally express it, the point that take the leaders of the nation and hang them before God and in front of in broad daylight, Lashem. That is to say, of course, halachically speaking, we know that it's not meant literally, but there's a point in terms of how the Torah Shebech Tzav. In terms of Torah Shebech Tzav, take the leaders. That's true. Take the leaders and hang them is true. In the same way that ayin tachas ayin, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, halachically speaking, you don't do it. You do it through money. We learn that through the Torah Shebech Tzav that it's money. But in Torah Shebech Tzav, it is a truth. It's expressing a true idea. That's the ideal of justice. That's what the person deserves. In terms of the act, there's an abstract ideal. Then there's the question as to the practical implementation. You can't always practically implement the abstract ideal. That's adjustments. Here, too, it's making a point, in my opinion. The point over here is it's a condemnation of the leaders. The Gemara, of course, asks the question, if the people sin, so the leaders, what did they do? Why did they deserve to be killed? That's true in the realm of halacha. Because you have to differentiate between the halachic system and between a different framework, a framework in terms of philosophically, from a philosophical standpoint. generally speaking, if there's a serious corruption in the people, it's a defect in the leaders, because that's their responsibility. That's precisely what leaders are supposed to do. And I think this parsha will also reflect upon some of the issues that confront leaders. In order for the leaders to function properly, they have to be on a certain level. A level of complete commitment, of course, to the principles of Torah, that's one thing. But to be able to confront the sinners. In order to be able to confront the sinners and to lead them or to prevent them from going astray, they have to free themselves from that element of fear of people, the fear of people. Have to have complete Yirah Shamayim, and the only thing that they're concerned with is fear of God. But this is not an easy thing. It's a very powerful thing. It's part of human nature to want to be popular, to want the support, to want the approval. And leaders, by and large, have this more generally speaking. A person becomes a leader because that's precisely what he's looking for, because he wants to be a leader. And of course it's the Yesod and Yahadus that one of the qualifications of leaders is Moshe Rabbeinu. It's true, God got angry, but that's the point. That he was so far removed from any desire for leadership that that's precisely what made him qualified. If a person is seeking to be the leader, then that itself disqualifies the person. Because that's the biggest corruption in people. That desire to be a leader, to magnify the ego. That means by definition the person is corrupt. Because he may have good ideas, and he may be an idealist, and he may have a certain strength. But there will always come a point where he'll have to oppose the people, the will of the people. The leader has to be capable of opposing the desires of the people and overpowering them, overcoming them. Not only through persuasion, sometimes through persuasion, but sometimes through prohibition. Who would be an ideal leader in terms of this idea in Tanakh? Shmuel was this kind of a leader. And God paid him the greatest compliment, because it was precisely when he was the leader that the Jews made a demand for a king. They wanted to switch to the kingship. And they were condemned. And Shmuel was upset. And God told him, don't be upset. It's not lo oscha ma'asu. It's not you that they've despised, ki yamosi. Now, that is, it's hard to imagine a greater compliment. That God was saying, it has nothing to do with you. You did the right thing. Because you were, precisely because you were a great leader, and you did not have any fear of Adam, and you had no desire for human approval, and you only wanted to fulfill the will of God, that is what makes you a great leader. And that's precisely why they reject. The fact that they're rejecting you, that's the greatest compliment. And to the contrary, you see, today, it's a whole new phenomenon. I've made this point that today, by and large, just making a general point, can't get too specific with these kinds of things, I think that rabbis in general, have gained greater popularity than at any point in history. 100 years ago, rabbis weren't that popular. And all of a sudden, in the last 30, 35 years, you have the phenomenon of the rabbi that's very popular, everybody loves him, and you have that kind of relationship. That's something that should be analyzed carefully. When people rave about how wonderful this rabbi is and how everybody likes him, that doesn't necessarily mean he's a bad person. It doesn't necessarily. But it's not in the nature of things. It's not in the nature of things that people are going to love to that degree, unanimously, a rabbi who's basically doing his job, which will include... Not a mitzvah that he should be hated either. You do with seichel. But it will include a certain element of rebuke. I mean, real rebuke. Not the kind of rebuke that everybody, you know, expects, and it doesn't really hit home. It's just general kind of things. So there are smart rabbis know how far to go, and they're very clever at it, and they can give a speech which sounds like a rebuke, but it's done in such a way that nobody takes it seriously. Let's put it this way. But to really hit and really attack certain things, you take a look at certain developments that we talk about in the Jewish community, and you have the same type of an issue, like where are the rabbis, all these problems that develop. After the fact, once it becomes popular and And kids, every year there's another thing. You know, this at risk, the other thing at risk, everything at risk. Or issues, many, many issues. How many rabbis are going to get up and condemn the materialism? Today, a lot of Orthodox Jews have become very wealthy. And the ostentation and the display and living the materialistic life. And even though you're keeping halacha and you're shomer halacha, but nevertheless, this is a real departure from the whole philosophy. It's a violation of kedushin to you. How many people are going to get up in a shul whose significant members are really living that kind of life? And to really critique that in an intelligent way. Obviously, you don't want to embarrass anybody. But that's all. It's off bound. You can't do that. Can't do that. That's the way it is. So that's a serious question in terms of what kind of leadership you're going to have. This parsha expresses that. Kach et kol rashei ha'am v'hoka osam. That if a situation developed, it wasn't a situation where it was impossible for the leaders to know what was going on. If they would have been zealously doing their job and completely unconcerned about popularity, then this would not have happened. If you follow the psukim, so Moshe said to the Shofte Yisrael, Hirgu ish anashav hanitzmodim lebal pa'or. This is interesting. Why the Torah has to point out that Moshe actually conveyed this to the Shoftim. We could have taken it for granted. Obviously Moshe, in many cases, you just have the fact that God commanded Moshe to do something and the Torah doesn't have to follow up that he did it. We know he did it. But I think that it fits in that Moshe had to tell them, and look at the word, Hirgu ish anashav, that is your own people, those of your own tribe. That is, you have to gird yourself because it's going to be difficult. This is what you're being instructed to do is going to be contrary to your natural inclinations, and these are your own people, and then there's all kinds of pressures on you, and there's connections, and so on and so forth. And hanitzmodim lebal pa'or. Again, that is the sin. It was not the avera per se, but it's that state. Those people who allow themselves to become attached. What happens next is unexpected, unanticipated. That is, it talks about one person. One person, a man from Bnei Yisrael, came and brought before his brothers a Midianite openly in the sight of Moshe and in the sight of the entire congregation of Israel. And they were crying outside of the Ohel Moed. So what is this case of any significance? There were many. It wasn't just one. If it was just one person, I don't think you'd have the whole issue here. And suddenly this creates a whole new problem. And then you have the story of Pinchas. Pinchas saw. And he got up from the congregation. And he took a spear in his hand. And then, of course, you have that fascinating description. He followed them into the tent. It doesn't just say that he killed them. That would have been enough. We have to know the specifics. It gets very graphic and describes how he followed them into the tent and put the spear between both of them, obviously when they were together, and in a manner which would indicate precisely, that's the reason why he did it that way, to indicate precisely why they were being killed. And then the plague stopped. Now, it's interesting to note that this is very obvious, this is very, very significant in terms of the entire plague, because the Ramban goes as far as saying that this took place before the Shoftim, before the judges had an opportunity to do what they were supposed to do. Now, Rashi apparently doesn't learn that way, because Rashi, so according to Rashi, as seen on Hay, Rashi on Pasuk 5, it's clear that Rashi maintained that they carried out that command. But the Torah is not recording it. The Torah recorded that Moshe gave them the charge, and we assume that they did it. So the cessation of the plague, according to Rashi, was brought about by two things. Because the Torah associates the cessation with the action of Pinchas. So it means that both requirements, obviously this became a new requirement, because at the time that the order was given, you didn't have the action of Pinchas, of not of course the action of Pinchas, but the action of Pinchas was necessitated by the action of Zimri. And according to the Ramban, the action of Pinchas was so significant, apparently the whole situation must have changed. You see how important it is. Because the Ramban is saying that command was necessary before this action of Zimri. But once Zimri did what he did, and Pinchas did what he did, so that changed the whole situation. And in and of itself, the action of Pinchas was sufficient to quell the plague. The action of this Ish Yisrael, here he's being described as an Ish Yisrael, which means that he was a significant person. But it doesn't mention his name here, it mentions his name later. But there's two kinds of significance. Sometimes a person is significant for his goodness, for his greatness. Here, it was because he occupied a certain position. Of course, what he did was an act of wickedness. But precisely because of his position, his authority in the system, this is what gave it a special character. This is why if it was just another person who did a sin, and if he was a little bit brazen, it wouldn't have been a problem. What made it a problem is that when the leaders themselves set the example of being sinners, they break down the law themselves and they establish something which is contrary as being the ideal. This is a separate kind of a problem. And of course, this is plague. This also breakaway movements where people who achieve a certain level, they sort of cannibalize the system. Because it's one thing if a person is born Jewish and then he becomes even a Karl Marx, whatever. If he denounces Judaism. That's whatever you think of the person, obviously. He's not someone that I admire for whatever reason. But at least he's not posing as an exponent of anything which is Jewish. He left the system. He doesn't agree. He thinks Judaism is ridiculous. And he's not trying to confuse it. But how many people are cannibalizing? That is, they want to make a name for themselves among the Jewish people. So Jewish people is Judaism. So you absorb whatever you can of Judaism. And then you distort the whole system and try to present that which is absolutely distorted, absolutely contrary to Judaism. And there is no position in the universe that can be more contrary to Judaism, and you will find so-called rabbis advocating it, such as same-sex marriage and abortion and every kind, anything which could be an abomination. The biggest abomination you will find, clergy. You will find clergy, whatever, from with a degree, from whatever place, pushing it, advocating it. So, in this case over here, you see the problem. Rashi says that what motivated Zimri, he was a leader of the tribe of Shimon, and apparently the people, they were the ones that were involved in this. It's very significant, as we'll soon see, that it was Shimon that was implicated in this. And when they started, when the judging began, according to Rashi, so they ran for protection. Apparently they felt also that they'd have a certain immunity, a certain protection. And they went to Zimri. And they said to him, we're being judged to die, and you're going to sit around? You've got to defend us. You've got to do something. So that, apparently, his desire was for himself, to give in to the will of the people. Then he went ahead and he braved, in order to become their champion, to remain as their champion, he brazenly went ahead and he took this Midianite woman who was a very significant princess. He was a leader in the tribe of Shimon, and she was a significant princess. That was devastating. Now it's more than just an individual. Now it's a leader, and he's doing it openly, and he's flaunting the authority of Moshe. This is calamitous. Because once the people see that, then it's a whole different situation. Now it's a complete breakdown. It's a total demoralization. And this sets an example, and the people follow. Well, if he obviously it's not so simple anymore, you see. That's what people always say. That's what you say, but there's the rabbis. Because there's any position you take today, no matter how cogent it is, no matter what the sources are, if you go in front of a certain group, they'll say, that's very nice, and that's a good, it's certainly legitimate, but there are other rabbis that feel differently. and they'll spout the position of other rabbis. And listen to, look at Rashi on La'enei Moshe. A certain element of brazenness, and you can see the distorted reasoning. Don't you see the distortion over here? How would, he had an argument. What was his argument? See, no one ever does a sin and doesn't have the rationalization. That's something which is amazing. You say, okay, the person's a sinner. I could never rationalize that. Just say, nope, you will, there'll always be a rationalization. What was the rationalization? To me, that's always worse. It wouldn't be so bad if people would just admit that they were wrong. Nope, they'll work it out. They'll the distortion of the truth. He said, what does it mean to, he said to Moshe, Amalo, Moshe, he brought the Midianite woman. This is what Chazal say. He brought the Midianite woman and said, Zu Asura O Muteres. It's very reminiscent of Korach dressing up the 250 with the blue talesim and asking Moshe, does this require tzitzis? He brought the woman over to Moshe. Is she prohibited or permitted? Im tomer asura. Well, he didn't even wait for an answer. He sort of gave the answer. Because he told him already where he stands. If you weren't going to say that she's... Because I know that you're going to say she's prohibited. Bas yisro mi hetira loch locha. So the daughter of Yisro, whom... Where did you get your heta from? And this is brought down as a Sanhedrin. Yisro was from Midian, and the daughters were a Midianite. So basically, what do you see from that? Well, the answer would be, that was before Matan Torah. So what's his question? Of course, he's also diminishing the whole authority of Moshe Rabbeinu. You did the same thing, same thing. Oh, yeah, well, you did it before Matan Torah. Well, that's fine. That's very nice. But you married a Midianite woman. So you may have had a technicality. You did it before Matan Torah, but you shouldn't have. If it was really that bad, you wouldn't have done it anyways. Don't look for these halachic heterim, so to speak. That kind of thinking. So it was an attempt to diminish the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu. You see how far these things go. Any corrupt leader is prepared to destroy the Jewish people, or any people that he's leading. Absolutely prepared. If you're a corrupt leader, it means, this is the way you view it, that the people are a means to your self-aggrandizement. Now, when you see that in a person like Saddam Hussein, who wouldn't leave the country, and was prepared that the whole country should be destroyed, and Hitler, yamach shemo, same thing, Hussein, yamach shemo, was prepared, he gave orders, scorched earth policy. That since Germany has not won the war, since they've proven to be inferior or unsuitable, whatever, they couldn't come through, then there shouldn't be a Germany anymore after he's gone. There shouldn't be a Germany. He was prepared to, the whole country should be destroyed. So essentially, it's hard for your person to understand that. Because you don't understand the mentality of a truly wicked person. That's why there's always evil in the world, because the good people, for whatever reasons, can't understand what the phenomenon of Russia is. And to a certain extent, we've been affected by Christian morality of this forgiveness and you can't hate the wicked. It's a perfection to hate the wicked. But I think very, very few people can really understand that because it's alien to you. It's not something that's not the way you would think. But that's the reality. A corrupt leader, that's the bottom line, is going to sacrifice the people for himself. That's what it is. Now we turn to the action of Pinchas. Vayar Pinchas, he saw. Obviously, it's not talking about physical seeing, visual. He saw, he understood. Instantly, he recognized what the significance was. The Chilul Hashem, the desecration of Hashem, the effect it would have on the people. He saw all of this instantaneously. Now Rashi says on Vehema Bochim, which is very strange, that whole phenomenon seems to be strange, that they were crying. So Rashi says that the halacha was hidden from them, so to speak, or they forgot the halacha. And the halacha was that Boel Aramis, that one who's engaged in sexual relations with a Gentile woman, Kanayim Pogumbo, that zealots, here we come to the phenomenon of zealots, only zealots. It's interesting, why mean zealots? Anyone, if the halacha is that you can kill them, so why only zealots? Are permitted to deal with them, liquidate them, take care of them. But anyways, this is the halacha that they forgot. Go kulam b'bchiya. So they were crying. Be'egel amad Moshe keneged shishim ribo. In the case of the egel, Moshe stood up against 60 ribo. Ribo is 600,000 against the whole nation, basically. He stood up against the whole nation in opposing them. In grinding it into ash and mixing it with water and making them drink it. The Khan Rafu Yadav. Here he was weak. El Kadesha Yevo Pinchas Vital Es Haroylo. So that Pinchas should come along and take which is what was due to him. Again, let's do Rashi on Pinchas. Vayar Pinchas, that's on 7. Pinchas saw. So Rashi said he saw the action and he remembered the halacha. And according to Rashi, there was a discussion. He said to Moshe, I received from you the halacha. You taught it to me. That boil aram is kanayim pogumbo. That one who has relations with a Gentile, so the zealots can deal with him. Amar lo, he said to him, kayana de igrita iulahevi parvanka. Which means to say, the one who reads the read the letter, so to speak, he should deliver it. That is hinting you. All right, you're the ones. So you, there's an important halacha over there, as we'll soon see. Miyai vayikach ramach biyado. Immediately he took the sword in his hand. Now the Rambam discusses this in the Laws of Forbidden Sexual Relations. That's Isurei Bia, chapter 12. So he says an Israelite that had relations with a Gentile woman from the nations, or a Jewish woman. Same thing, who's having relations with a Akam, a Gentile. So, well, first he deals with the prohibition, if it's Derech Ishus. It's interesting how this halacha is treated. From a strictly halachic standpoint, from the standpoint of punishment, it's not treated that strictly. Because the Rambam says that it's only Derech Ishus, that the prohibition of the Dioraisa, biblical, is when they have relations in a framework of ishus. Now he has to use the word derech ishus, a manner of marriage, because there is no marriage with a Gentile. There's no, halakhically speaking, you can't marry a Gentile. So that if you go to a justice or any kind of rabbi, whatever nonsense he may do, as a ceremony to marry them today, which interestingly enough, you have many, many rabbis that do that. In conjunction with priests, because they want to have a, you know, tolerance, joint ceremony. So, but the question is, are they married? No. I mean, according to the civil law, they'll be married. But according to halacha, there's no such thing as a get, because it doesn't recognize, there's no marriage taking place. But this is recognized as derech ishus. It's in the framework of, if they're living together. So if they're living together, it doesn't mean now they don't have to have a marriage document. It means that this halacha, if a man or a woman has a casual, a one-time encounter, so to speak, sexual relation with a non-Jew, it's a violation, but this is not the prohibition. He did not violate the Dioraisa, interestingly enough. It's only if it's in the framework of a marriage situation, a relationship. Yeah. Now, the support for this is because it says, Lo tischaten bam. You shouldn't marry them. That's the violation. So it's only when a person has sexual relations in the framework of a marriage. In the next halacha, he says that this violation is only if it's in the framework of marriage, but if it's a relationship in the framework of znus, just an encounter, so midrabanan makas mardus, the rabbanan punish him, but it's rabbinic. He only violated a rabbinic ordinance because it's a gzera. It's a fence lest he come to marriage. In Halacha Dalet, he says, whoever has relations with a Gentile, whether it be in the framework of marriage or whether in the framework of znus, if he did it befarhesya, which is publicly, and that is in the sight of 10 people of Israel or more, in pagubo kanoim, if the zealots encounter him, that is vargu, and they kill him, hare elu mushubachin, whose reason? These people are to be praised. They're in a high plane. V'davar zeh halacha l'moshe mi-sinai hu. And this is a halacha l'moshe mi-sinai. Raya l'davar zeh. The proof of this is Maisa Pinchas b'Zimri. So the case of Pinchas and Zimri is the proof, is the source. Now he gives further conditions. This is very important. That the kanoi is only permitted to deal with the person at the time of the action, while the action is in progress, as Zimri, because that's what the now he explains the pasuk, because it says v'yeso isha el kavasa. That graphic description is indicating that they were involved. It was at the time of the action. However, if they're finished, you can't kill them. It's only while they're involved in the action. Once the action is over, you can't kill them. And if he did, then he'll be liable to the death penalty. That is to say, once, because in general, all penalties, all punishments can only be, you can't punish a person while they're involved in the action, any action. Even if they're involved in a avodah zarah. You have to wait, you bring them to the best them tries them, and they give them whatever the penalty is. So you can't go around doing these kinds of things. This is an exception. Now, he says, if the kanoi came and requested permission from the Bezdin to kill him, ain't more in low. We don't paskin for him. That is to say, like a person knows something is going on, and he goes to Bezdin and asks them what to do, we don't paskin for him. And even though it's at the time of the action. Moreover, he says, if the kanoi, the zealot, goes to kill the Boel, the one who is involved, the Nishmata Boel, and then the Boel removes himself and he kills the Kanoi, the self-defense. Kedei l'hatzel atzmo miyado, to save himself, ein ha-Boel neragalov. It's interesting. It's a funny thing. You have a right to kill him, and he has a right to defend himself, and if he kills you, he's putter because it's a Yorodev. You're chasing after him. He can defend himself. The Rambam in the next halachas makes it clear how serious this avera is. And essentially, it's because the person in doing this is becoming attached to avodah zarah. That's what the real prohibition is. In a sense, it's more serious than simply than avodah zarah per se, the action of avodah zarah per se. And Chazal referred to this, the Tanakh refers to it, as though he's becoming married to the avodah zarah, to the idol. And he says that davar zeh gorem lidavik ba'akum, that this thing causes us to be attached to the idol worshippers, that God separated us from them, and to turn away from God and to rebel against Him. Generally speaking, as I said, the term fanatic or zealot is used negatively, that you criticize someone. That someone who becomes completely obsessed with something to the exclusion of all other considerations, some people say he's a fanatic, like an extremist. He doesn't see things in perspective. So it's generally speaking, it's a negative term, and pretty much with good reason. Well, of course, it depends upon whether you disagree with the person or not, but if you disagree and you see the person, you can't reason with the person on the area, he's a fanatic. That's exclusive to this particular thing. So what is this kanois? What's different about the Pinchas? It's interesting, although we do criticize zealousness or fanaticism, but according to the view of the Torah, it's not that simple. That it's virtually speaking, there's no midah, there's no characteristic that in and of itself is necessarily evil, an emotional disposition. And we always speak about that. For example, compassion. Compassion, generally speaking, is, of course, a good thing. But compassion in and of itself is not a good thing. Because it depends on the situation. If the situation is one where it could be the most evil thing. If it calls for a serious action, but you're blocked by the emotion of compassion, so then it's an evil. Now, this emotion, this phenomenon over here of this zealousness, which prompted him to bekano es kinasi. He was zealous. Kina. Kina is an expression of jealousy. He took it upon himself. He was, it's like you're jealous for somebody else. It means to say that he couldn't tolerate the Chilul Hashem. That's a certain degree of perfection. That there's two types of zealousness. If it's rooted in the person's own ego, if it's rooted in most cases, that's what it is. It means a person has become obsessed. His whole personality has become attached to one thing, and you can't tell, that's it. So that's a corrupting phenomenon. But in this case, it was bekano es kinasi, that he reached a certain degree of perfection. Of course, it's based upon his avas Hashem. That all of the emotions became directed. His emotional reactions were based upon not his own personal kavod, but the kavod shemayim. That's a state of perfection. It's interesting. You see that, for example, by David, when David was dancing in front of the Aron in a manner where he was like going crazy, and his wife was upset that he was letting his hair down. The king should behave differently. And he rebuked her. And he says, no, this is in the presence of God, there is no human covet. This is the greatest honor, to be able to give honor to God. That's a certain perfection, which she was lacking at that point in time. Now, I just want to point out one more thing, though. I'm just suggesting this as a possibility. That this, interesting, see, this is the ultimate expression of the greatness of a leader. This is the contrary to what the others. To a certain extent, the whole parsha talks about the weaknesses of the leaders, that they fail to intervene, they fail to oppose the people. That's based upon a certain weakness. To the extent that they had a need for approval, to whatever extent, that impeded them. And this is the greatness of Pinchas, that he absolutely had was completely divorced from any consideration of the people, and completely is all of his, not just abstractly, but all of his emotional energy was involved in the in being mekane, in the negation of the Chilul Hashem. Now, it seems to me that it's interesting. It tells you Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. It goes all the way back, and essentially what you have over here. Of course, you know that Pinchas comes from the tribe of Levi. And the enemy over here was someone from the tribe of Shimon. So we all know that these two tribes were very together at one point in time. And that I'm just suggesting as a possibility, just throwing this out for your consideration. Because a zealot, this deed requires the proper utilization of a certain emotion. There's a certain emotional disposition of a kind of a person that has a lot of anger. It goes back, in my opinion, the story of Shechem. That Shimon and Levi, they avenged. That was a case of revenge. You know, that Shechem had raped their daughter Dinah and was holding her. And then they wanted to marry us, and they came to negotiate. And they made this ruse. Now, obviously, Yaakov was there, but Yaakov didn't know what their plan was. And we've studied it. They worked out a whole agreement, but the condition was that the entire city, all the males, had to circumcise. So they did so because they had a tremendous desire to join together. They held out the idea they would join together, become one people, and so forth. Then on the third day, it says that Shimon and Levi went and they wiped out all the men of the town. Totally destroyed them. So apparently that was their own plan. And Yaakov Avinu was very upset with them. There was an argument. And he criticized them for what they were doing. And they said, HaKazona Yasa Sachoseinu? They defended their position. That can we allow anyone to treat our sister like a zone, like a prostitute? So at that point in time, it seems that there's an argument. They maintained it was the correct thing to do. Later on, however, in the brachos that Yaakov gives before he dies, so you see what the real idea of a bracha, the Orarapam Kiyaz. He cursed is their anger. That's very interesting. Rashi points out, he didn't curse them, he cursed the anger. Which seems to be a very, slim kind of a distinction. No, but it's very significant. And what do you say? Achal came to Israel. I'm going to split them up. The combination over here is not good. Because these two tribes get together. It's interesting, you have that theme by Yosef too, that Yosef separated Shimon from the rest of the brothers. He didn't want those two together. But basically, what was the argument? What Yaakov was saying is that it wasn't L'shem Shemayim. That it's HaKazona Yasa Esachoseinu, that there was a personal element involved. That the reason why you reacted that way, it wasn't a zealousness for the sake of heaven. There was a personal emotion. It was your sister. So you took it personally. And therefore it was wrong. So what was the cure over here? Was the cure that you have to repress this? You have to repress, get rid of this. Or no. See, Orer Apam Kiyaz, cursed is the anger. He cursed the anger, but not them. Means to say, that's a bracha. He's pointing out. You point out to someone something about their personality and how they function to make them aware of it so they can perfect themselves. It doesn't mean you get rid of it. It means you bring it under control. That's something which can, in the right situation, be utilized for the correct purpose. That's a whole different way of interpreting it. So it seems to me that in the case of Pinchas, that you see that perfection. No, you know, it's not. There's a time, there's a place when you have to act with that type of force. In Chazal say, Af chachmasi amdali. That my chachma stood for me, protected me. So Chazal say, Chachma shel imati ba'af. It's the wisdom that you acquired with anger. That's the wisdom that remains with you. That af means with a certain type of energy, a certain amount of aggression. You attack the, you attack something too, because you have to understand it. So that's what he's saying over here. That, in my opinion, that Pinchas ben Elazar, the Heshev es Hamasi mal ben Israel, that right, the anger was directed at Bnei Israel now. Because on one level or another, the Chilul Hashem was being tolerated, and this reaction was the perfect reaction. The perfect reaction of someone whose emotions are in line with the true idea would be to act with absolute zealousness. That's why he remembered, he knew the halacha, he knew what had to be done. And he did it because he knew because that knowledge has to come from a certain inner perfection. That's what the Rambam is pointing out, that the Kanayim Pogumbo means that you're permitted to act in this situation. The case of Kanayim Pogumbo is a very interesting case. It's where the halacha gives permission for a person to act outside the normal channels of the halachic system, but it has to stem from that inner perfection. You'll find there are situations. There are situations in different areas where a person will react instinctively, but because of a certain disposition, like a mother with a child instinctively will know how to move in a certain situation to protect their child, where other people are not sure, they have to wait, and they're not clear. But sometimes because of your attachment to something, your attachment, your understanding, all of your energies are focused on protecting something, so then a situation arises instinctively, because it's ingrained. If the fact that you have to stop and think about it, that itself is a certain defect or a certain distance. But you're acting in line with the truth, though. See, that's the difference between what we call a zealot. What we call a zealot and a fanatic is someone who's obsessed because of their own ego. It's a different phenomenon. So that blocks off their reason. But that, see, the Ramban maintains... That theme goes throughout the parsha over here. That the deeper defect over here had to do with the leadership of the people. And the fact that a Chilul Hashem was being perpetrated because of a defect in the leadership. And that's why, according to the Ramban, Ramban says it openly, that once Pinchas did this deed, the impact, the effect it had upon the people was such that the Magefa stopped at that point. Absent, even before what the judges did. That's not to say that the people who sinned would not be punished, but in terms of the tikkun, in terms of the correction, the Parsha says later on that Pinchas ben Elazar, Heshev es Hamasi, that he removed the anger. Of course, according to the Ramban, it means to say that the other situation had been taken care of, but this was also necessary. Because once it took this turn, once Zimri took this action, it created a whole new situation. A public Chilul Hashem of the most devastating kind. So that's what the greatness of Pinchas was. That he demonstrated a different type of a perfection. It's interesting that, as I said, I'm just speculating. In my opinion, it does go back to the bracha of Yaakov. That emotion itself, that emotional disposition itself is not evil. But the real perfection of Judaism is not to just repress, but it's to study and to take the emotions. And if a person has the correct perspective, then every one of these emotions can be utilized in the proper situation.